This episode is brought to you by Iams Pet Food. When you choose Iams dry dog or cat food, you can see a difference in your pet with your own eyes. Healthy energy in 5 days, healthy digestion in 10 days, and healthy skin and coat in just 25 days. Satisfaction for you and them. Guaranteed or your money back. Feed Iams dry dog or cat food and see a visible difference. Visit Iams.com/difference to learn more.
Welcome back to the Meanie Kimes Show, featuring Lenny and featuring Dominique Foxworth and featuring the New York Jets, because it feels like they have a residency now, making news last week, firing Robert Saleh, making news this week, right before we start recording, trading for Davante Adams after their loss on Monday Night Football. We are here to talk about that game. We will talk about the Bills winning, I promise. We are going to do winners and woofs for the weekend, but once again, we are starting with the New York Jets, the newsiest team in football. So if you missed it, the details of it, the trade for Davante Adams from the Las Vegas Raiders is for a third round pick that can get turned into a second if Adams either makes, I think, first or second team All Pro, or the Jets make it to the AFC Championship and he is on the active roster. Dominique, let's just start here. This trade seemed, I wouldn't say inevitable, but seemed like the most likely outcome for a while. We saw the Jets offense last night under Todd Downing. Do you feel like, A, they needed Davante? Do you feel like Davante changes this team dramatically in their prospects? How do you feel about this from the Jets' perspective?
I mean, everyone can use a great player. So
start there.
I'm not going to say that it's bad to acquire Davante Adams, obviously. However, I think we covered this. That wasn't the issue with this team. And the one thing that they did do well last night was explosive plays,
yeah,
which is important. So they were bad in the red zone. And so there is an argument for, you notice in red zone, there's the field is more compact and there's no room for error. And I just finished watching a bunch of Caleb tape because I think we're going to dive into Caleb on my show. And that was one of the places where he succeeded, was in the red zone. And you notice, I'm just reminded how important accuracy and the same paginess of ball placement, because we talk about how great they're, like, some passes are look really bad if the receiver is not anticipating that placement. And Caleb did a good job of putting it where Keenan Allen was expecting it, even though it wasn't open. So I think that's the positive argument for adding Davante, is all of those plays where it seemed like the ball placement was just a little off, that changes if your receiver is anticipating that misplaced ball, particularly in the red zone, which was a place where they struggled last night. So that's my positive spin. I'll be quiet and I'll get back to my more genuine expectations for this result after you respond.
Yeah. First of all, as far as like the business of it, a third for Davante Adams when you're all in is fine. And if you make it to the AFC Championship, it will have been worth it to trade it a second round. So for just starting there, I think his money is not guaranteed after this year. It is a lot. So I think it's like over $30 million, $35 million, I believe, in 2025 salary if they were to keep him. So they might restructure him. We'll see. He's still playing at an incredibly high level. That's also worth saying, right? Yep. Like, he is still one of the best receivers in the NFL. I think there's kind of two separate questions. One, like, how badly did they need this? And two, does this make them competitive with the likes of the Chiefs, the Ravens, maybe even the Bills? I'll start with the first thing. They absolutely need this, and it absolutely helps them, right? I mean, to your point, any team would be better with Davante Adams, but I think this team in particular, the need was so glaring for the reason you said, and this, you saw this last night, certainly in the red zone. It's an offense that's so timing-based and so dependent on Rodgers hitting difficult throws and being on having same paginess, as you said, with his receivers. So naturally bringing in a receiver who not only is amazing, but also it has the best connection with Aaron Rodgers of any player Aaron Rodgers has ever played with, massively huge. I also love what it does for the rest of the team. The Jets have faced the second most man coverage in the NFL this year. I suspect that will go down now with Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson will get to face in a lot of twos, which is incredible for him. I think you saw last night, Breece Hall, the running game was very boom or bust last night against Buffalo, but he did look good. He had hit a couple of explosives running into light boxes. There's going to be more light boxes with Davante Adams on the field. So I think overall, like, I expect this offense to be more efficient, more explosive, more successful. The team, I still do not put in the same category as those top teams in the AFC, but at least they have a chance of hitting that ceiling now. And of course, in the playoffs, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a move that you can poo-poo because of the cost wasn't significant and all the reasons why we described it being good for them. However, there's a couple other things that are concerning is their issues with the offensive line are not going to go away. Their issues with penalties don't go away. Sorry, go ahead.
No. That was okay. Just the penalties, man. I mean,
that doesn't go away when Davante shows up. And I think this is harder for us to talk about, and I think it's generally we're pretty responsible in not making assertions about team chemistry and team culture and stuff when we haven't talked to specific sources. However, I think it's reasonable to project that this team is in a tenuous state emotionally, and adding Davante to Garrett Wilson. Like you said, Garrett's going to see a lot of twos that should make him happy. I'm not sure it does. And I'm not sure what happens when you have a brand new head coach who doesn't have head coaching experience. And credibility is so important. I think when things start to get rough, it's really nice to be able to look over at somebody who's done it before and someone who you trust. It's someone who's reached the mountaintop or at least has a level of credibility that you can lean on. And they don't have that person in the entire building. And Aaron Rodgers is not that person. It's just not who he is as a personality standpoint, even though he's already been there. He's never been the guy that everyone said is a galvanizing force. I think the Jets are the teammates that probably speak the most highly of him, which tends to be the case when he's on your roster. And I'm sure last year he was like a beacon of hope because he was the promise of a brighter future. And now we're in a spot where he's in the post-game press conference, essentially taking responsibility, but at the same time calling people out, pointing out that people are running the wrong routes. And so I don't know what Davante Adams does to this. Maybe he settles it. Winning makes everything feel better. So if the offense gets better immediately, then everything is good. But I do think there's some randomness to what's going to happen as a result of adding him. But if things have been bad this far, adding him, just kind of shaking up the snow globe and see what happens isn't a bad thing.
You mentioned that Gary Wilson might not be happy. How about Mike Williams? What a sequence of events. The final throw was picked off, as you alluded to, and he says he's injured, which I'm sure he's. I'm not doubting him, but it certainly draws the internet's ire. Right after the game, Rodgers says, you know, talks about how he ran the wrong route, essentially, and you know, acknowledges it was an underthrown ball, regardless of whether he broke out and set in. And then the next morning, you wake up and find that they've traded for Davante Adams. And quite a 12 hours or 16 hours for him. I tend to agree with you. My feeling is that the offense will be a lot better, but it'll still be inconsistent. I think watching Rodgers last night, it just felt like I feel like I have a pretty firm grasp on who he is this season at this point, which is to say he is going to throw in a game some of the best throws you'll see of any quarterback all week. I mean, the seam ball to Lazard was crazy, right? But he also, and this I think also will factor into the red zone stuff, especially in contrast with what you saw from Josh Allen. I think about like Josh Allen on the touchdown to Dawson Knox where pressure's coming, he wiggles out of it and then, you know, throws it in. And I'm like, damn, that's such a difference maker in the red zone in particular. And Davante Adams certainly helps on that timing stuff and they're going to be more efficient. But his limitations in terms of his mobility will affect them. I mean, this game, offensively, it was interesting, Dominique, because they were in some ways better. They had a season-high 8-play explosive plays, one of which was a Hail Mary that the Bills inexplicably defended the way they did. We could talk to that when we get to the Bills. But so they were more explosive, and that was they were 0.19 EPA per play, which is very good and much higher than season average. But their success rate was actually worse than their season average, which is more about like a down-to-down basis. Right. Are you moving the ball? And they went 4-for-12 on third down. And Rodgers also in particular, and this is something I've just been kind of monitoring because it was such an issue the prior two games, once again struggled versus the blitz. All three of his sacks were when the Bills sent five-man pressures. One was a terrible flea flicker. Yeah. But and then one was called back because of a fake roughing call on Epinesa. But yeah, it just feels like this is who he is. Uh-huh. They're going to be very dependent on difficult throws. Now they have the receiver who will catch all of those. And so that certainly is going to make things. It certainly lifts the floor. I think the question, though, where the ceiling is and whether it compares to the top teams in the NFL is a big one.
I'm not sure that I agree. I think it probably, I don't know that it lifts the floor. I think it does raise the ceiling. But I guess it's a difference without a distinction, I guess. Because I think that what it actually does is, it probably, at least to me, there's a chance where there's more consistent play out of their offense. But, I mean, not more consistent. There's more big plays and there are more third down conversions, yeah, which could lead to more points. But the bad plays aren't going to go away. And that's my thing, is they didn't address the real issue with the offense to me. But I will say that they had 17 points, 20 points, and 9 points in the last three games. Davante Adams does fix that. So there should be some optimism. A lot of the issues with this team, though, or at least this conference, is not as strong as I think we thought coming in. So that's encouraging for them also. I will say, though, that the Hail Mary, I know that we're calling that a skill for Aaron Rodgers. That's fine. We can call that a skill. Great throw. Good job. He's done it 4 times. However, the fact that they lost that game, and maybe this is a bit anecdotal, but no one loses that game. Those are the things that when you hit a Hail Mary before the half, or obviously at the end of the game, these are the games when things are going in your direction and you should win. This team has been, I think they would look at it as being unlucky because they've lost some one score games, but I think they just aren't good. And then they also have the luck break against them sometimes.
Yeah, on both sides, it was kind of great in that it was the most penalty yards ever this season, but both sides had 11 penalties, so perfect symmetry. Great work, Adrian Hill, the ref. Both sides missed field goals, so it's kind of like, you know, it's hard to point to one. And like you said, if you take out the Hail Mary, scored, you know, 2 touchdowns. I mean, again, I do think
one
the offense
he moved a little bit, though. Like, there was the one touchdown to Garrett Wilson. Like, it wasn't much, but it was like a little bit of scramble to break down the defense. It doesn't mean that it's something he can do from here on out, but it was more than he's done up until this point.
The Jets defense, they got bullied in the run game, which we'll talk about with the Bills. And that's something that I think they're vulnerable towards this season. Otherwise, I thought they were fine. I know that there was, after the first drive, I saw people saying, oh, Saleh leaves and the Jets defense falls apart, and that certainly wasn't the case. Some questionable calls, but went both ways. So yeah, I'm not worried about this defense. I think they'll be fine. By the way, Hassan Reddick, now there's more noise about him potentially being traded, so we'll see what happens in that regard. On the Bills side, I thought this was a nice bounce back game for Josh Allen. Because it wasn't like a crazy stat line, 19 of 25, 250 yards, 2 touchdowns, some big runs as well. But I thought he played within himself for the most part, limited any crazy decisions except for the fumble turned not to be a fumble. Made a couple of really impressive plays outside of the pocket. Obviously, the throw to Ray Davis was exceptional. Went 4-for-5 for 95 yards. Perfect passer rating outside the pocket. And then, like I said, he did just enough with his legs. The Jets were blitzing him a lot, which was really interesting. And he had success against that and was beating it pretty well. What did you take? Like, it felt like after 2 weeks, he kind of needed this to bounce back.
That's what I was going to say. The last 2 weeks were two of the worst games that we've seen Josh Allen play in a long time. And he had some, like, a play that looked like he was concussed in both of the games, the last two games. So it's good to see. Sometimes we see that And then we find out later that the reason why a guy played poorly and had a bad stretch was because of some sort of head injury. It's good to see that he was back and playing well and he still had the magic. I think the best thing about Josh Allen now is that he is capable of having that game where it's like, all right, you don't need me. Like, I don't want to say not to be Superman because he did do that one Superman play, but to deep ball to Davis. But it felt like he wasn't trying and he did have that fumble. That got called back where he was trying
just
to
one,
be
one, though. It's just yeah. one. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that's my point.
He can have one as a treat. Just one.
Right. Just one ridiculous play every now and then. So it's nice to see that it seems like that's a consistent part of his repertoire now that he can play within himself when that's what's called for.
I thought the other thing that kind of jumped out to me, two things, actually. So Khalil Shakir was back, but he was obviously still injured, not a big part of their game plan. They desperately need him. I mean, the group of pass catchers is just not getting it done right now for Buffalo. Just not, you know, there's a couple of nice plays here and there, but there it really feels like they can be limited pretty aggressively. The Jets play a ton of man coverage in this one as well. I think that's something that they're going to encounter unless they trade for someone or Shakir is back and healthy. But the other thing is, I thought the run game with Ray Davis looked excellent. Yeah. I mean, the first drive was the one that really jumped out, but they were bullying. I mean, the Bills offensive line has been great all year, yeah. But I was just watching the interior in particular in this one and being like, damn, they are really dominating New York at the line of scrimmage. And I think it's like it's a nice pairing with Davis who, you know, that guy's gets north-south in a hurry. It feels like something sustainable, even against the Jets aren't a terrible run defense, but I think that's something that they can lean on as they try to figure out this passing game.
Yeah, offensive line is one of those things. I don't know what the perfect analogy is. I haven't thought of it just yet, but where sometimes it's the obvious answer or not the obvious answer to why an offense is good, but we're looking for all these other big reasons. But I've told you this before, when I pick teams to win the Super Bowl, the first thing I do before the season is check the offensive line. And if the offensive line is good, and then them staying healthy through the course of the year is something you can't control. But if the offensive line is not good, I don't believe that you can win a Super Bowl. And I noticed that with this team, we try to find so many other things to talk about, but I think one of the saving graces, and I saw this in the Caleb game too, was good protection. It's like if you protect most yeah. quarterbacks in football, they're going to get it done. And if you can run the ball without some ridiculous fancy scheme or even against loaded boxes, if your offensive line is good enough to get you a few yards before contact, like everything else gets a whole lot easier. You end up yeah. in third and threes and you end up being able to run when you're in the red zone, like these things. And then those aren't big plays that we write down or remember. And the EPA isn't always huge, but those are like the glue that sometimes keep offenses together.
Yeah, I think that is a great point about the Bills in general, as there have been, you know, some growing pains this season and injuries, and they're trying to figure out things in the pass game, and we'll see if they trade for anyone. The fact that the offensive line is a constant for them is a big part of why I feel pretty confident in this team always. I thought, by the way, the defense, like, you know, obviously they gave up some explosives, but in general, I thought they were actually pretty good against the run. Benford lost a few reps to Gary Wilson. It happens. Good player. But I continue to be like pretty impressed by this defense, given all of the injuries that they've dealt with. No Ed Oliver in this game. That certainly showed itself, but I also think it's impressive that they were able to hold them without it. They were very good in the red zone. And then at the end of the game, we were watching like incredible play by Taylor Rapp, mm-hmm. who was outstanding in this game, I thought, and it's been really good this season at safety. And then Taron Johnson to close it. I mean, we've talked about this defense before. They're really interesting to me because they're kind of like the all B+ squad. Like there's, you know, they don't have superstars on their roster, but they have a lot of really good players. And I kind of think that's like a good way to be in the NFL right now. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. And they've played above their heads, I think, for a while now, going back to last year based on talent alone. So I think when we it's not clear how to explain it. Like, the coach deserves a lot of credit and the general manager deserves a lot of credit because the players are better, or at least performing better than we expected. I think that continues. I was surprised because I think the one thing they do really well, or I thought they did really well, was eliminate the big plays and make people kind of earn it. So, like, seeing that it go the way it did last night was surprising to me. But they stood up in the red zone and they were able, because this game could have gone in completely differently if they were not good in the red zone. Yeah. But yeah, so I've been impressed with this defense. And I think we've all kind of, I picked them to win the division before the season, but I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. And this feels like kind of a down-ish year for this team. And so they're overachieving.
Would you feel differently?
Feels like they're
though,
on a path to overachieve.
Would you feel differently if they traded for Amari Cooper or DeAndre Hopkins?
No. I mean, I think maybe. I guess the offensive line is good. They don't have a playmaker at receiver or anyone on their offense that's just like, all right, this guy demands attention. The quarterback is obviously really good. I think the defensive issues, defensive injuries will come back to bite them at some point against good teams. I definitely would feel different, but I guess they could outscore it. Yeah. I would feel different if they had a weapon. Yeah.
I worry about matchups with them because Baltimore, I just think they don't match up well on defense with the physicality of that group. And this is Bills are a team that wants to play a lot of nickel and teams that can put bigger bodies on the field and run the ball are going to cause problems for them. But again, I actually feel like because the quarterback's so good, if you did a trade for a receiver any given Sunday, I would probably think they're capable of winning. I mean, Josh Allen is just capable of going nuclear. But
that's the point, yeah. They could win a lot of shootouts that way.
So, yeah. So, I guess, sum total, it's a big win for the Bills. I think they're certainly on pace to win the division. Going to be some ups and downs. I would still like them to trade for a receiver. Mm. And the Jets, next phase begins.
Yeah, they keep it entertaining.
All right, let's take a break, come back, and you lose to Caleb. We're going to talk about him, actually, after the break.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and over, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans, Massachusetts. If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and now you're the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities, whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on us and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See att.com/iPhone for details. At 5-Hour Energy, they stan the fan. From the new-to-football fans to the born-for-the-love-of-the-game lifers, they know fandom isn't just a hobby, it's a way of life. We're talking about the fans who are born to fan. In fact, 79% of professional football fans have been fans of their favorite team since they were born. Enter the superfans, the unofficial captains of the fan base, known for outlandish antics, hearts of gold, and passion on top of passion. They're leading the charge for their teams and for their cities. It's about their deep love for the community. It's about pride in their colors. It's about rooting for their team no matter what. No matter what team you root for, 5-Hour Energy knows being a fan requires heart, soul, and a whole lot of energy. That's why they've created a limited edition Stand the Fan 5-Hour Energy to keep you fueled throughout the season. Available on 5hourenergy.com, shipped nationwide. That's the number 5hourenergy.com.
Okay, so winners and woofs. I'm going to go first. I was going to do Caleb, but then I said, you know what? The top three rookie quarterbacks all had good weekends. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, let's, you know, the 1-2-3. Caleb, Jay Daniels, Drake May. Jay Daniels, we've talked about him a lot. So I thought he was outstanding against a Baltimore Ravens defense that was really took away a lot of what Washington likes to do on offense. And yet again, Jay Daniels, I thought, rose to the occasion and made plays in spite of it. Super impressive. So we can kind of let's put a pin in that because he has been in the winners category already. So Caleb and Drake, let's talk about Caleb first. So huge caveat, the Jags defense sucks.
Oh gosh, yeah. They're so like stagnant and dumb is like the word I would use to describe some of it. Yeah.
I can't believe how bad they are. But anyways, by the way, huge L was thinking that unit would be good under Ryan Nielsen. Whew. I mean, L for me. But I still thought, even setting that aside, Caleb was incredibly impressive. And what I loved about this game, do still worry about him holding on to the ball and what that's going to look like against good pass rushes. But when the ball comes out quick, it's beautiful. I mean, and this was the case in college, too. And this is why I was like, no, don't worry. I'm not worried about the long time to throw, because he can do it. The question is always, will he? But in this game, on quick game, he was 13 for 14 for 111 yards and 3 touchdowns. And who, baby, those touchdowns. The throws to Keenan Allen. Beautiful. Just beautiful. What did you see out of him? I know you said you're going to go into more depth on your show.
Yeah, I think some things that probably won't get a lot of attention is the accuracy on the quick game throws, where there's some that are open and he hits them. There's some that aren't open and he hits them anyway. That's impressive, and he can zip it into tight windows consistently in a way that's confident. There were some like questionable decisions that didn't kill him, but it was like, I saw a couple times where, to your point about him holding onto the ball too long, there was a quick available on the front side and he would go to the backside anyway, and then make a much more difficult but still perfect throw. So I really liked, for his sake, how much they supported him. And like, from the defense to the play calling to the playmakers to the offensive line, like, he had all the support that he needed. The scheming up of big plays from a double fake screen to a seam route, but also using empty to his advantage. The thing I love about empty is, while, yeah, you're telegraphing essentially we're going to throw the ball, but it stretches the defense and kind of forces them to declare pretty quickly. And that, when you have a quarterback with this arm strength and accuracy, he'll know where to go with the ball, then it's like, I don't know, shooting fish in a barrel. And I saw that the Jags' strategy, part of the reason why I was just saying they were dumb, was like, a couple of times they just rushed three and they were kind of daring him to like beat us with your arms. Like, that's exactly what it's the wrong thing to do with this particular rookie quarterback. So yeah, I was really impressed.
Yeah. He has the bye, and then they've got the Commanders with the big Jaden Caleb showdown. I think that, well, I'm obviously going to get into that game in great detail next week, but he's been building momentum and confidence facing a somewhat easy schedule, which, again, you played. It's great. I'm glad he is. That's important. He looks like the number one overall pick. But it's not only that he'll be challenged more. The Bears offensive line in particular, which looked like a nightmare at the beginning of the season, they've looked much better. They are helped when he gets rid of the ball quickly, obviously, and also with the run game working, that has helped as well. But they're going to face stiffer challenges coming up. But I mean, I just think, yeah, first of all, that double fake screen with the tight end up the seam, has that play ever failed in the history of football? I feel like I've only seen it work.
It does work.
Yeah,
I thought like his athleticism too. Like they had some design runs to him, and he scrambled to run. Also, it just seemed like he felt really comfortable. The defense supported him by keeping the Jags under wraps and giving him some time. He threw one interception that was just a really poorly thrown ball.
Bad throw. The scrambles are important because it's going to affect the way defenses play him. They're going to be scared to play two man, and it's very Mahomes-like. You know, like where, if you turn your back on him, he'll pick up eight when he needs seven. That's kind of his skill set, I would say. Yeah.
He looked fast on some of those plays. Like, he definitely looked faster than Mahomes, but Mahomes notoriously looks slow and somehow gets away from people. I had something else to say, but I forgot because I'm old.
But the two throws to Allen, the fade was fine, but the one up the middle into that, like, I mean, that was just a gorgeous throw, and it is really when the ball comes out quick, how unbelievably accurate he is with his ball placement. And you see that, and you're like, just more, faster, 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 because you're so good when you play fast. Okay, Drake May. So this was a game that many people, myself included, were concerned about. And not only did he survive, and he gets to play the aforementioned Jags this week. Congratulations, you made it through the gauntlet, and now you get to play Jacksonville. He showed some stuff. It was, you know, like, it was one of those games where there were some struggles in the beginning, interception, but it felt to me, Dominique, like he was kind of growing as the game went on, gaining confidence. Still some misses, but you saw certainly some things you have not seen from Jacoby Brissett in this, in terms of the athleticism, the ability to make some plays outside of structure, and then the deep ball. I mean, the go ball to Kayshon Boutte was beautiful for the touchdown. But overall, I thought like this is a really nice performance to build on.
Yeah, it's for his first game. It's great. Like I think the expectations
against a really good defense. Yeah.
Yeah, against a good defense with all the issues that we know that this Patriot team has on offense. For him to show promise and have plays where you're like, oh, yeah, I could see how good this will look with a little bit of more seasoning and with some damn help. I don't know it's really hard, even in a good situation, to show glimpses, especially as a young quarterback. And we get our expectations skewed, I think, by like kind of outliers. Mm-hmm. But most rookie quarterbacks kind of stink. And even like quarterbacks that turn out to be good, they're like protected for a while. They don't do anything that you're like, oh, that's special. Like for your first game to have plays where we're like, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now, if he can get some help and shake off some of the bad habits, like it's just a great promising start for him. Now it's not Jaden Daniels, of course, but he doesn't have what Jaden has around him. And he also may not be that good, but Jaden Daniels is so rare.
Such a different type of quarterback too. Like Jaden Daniels, so polished coming into the NFL. And now Jaden Daniels, you know, my question with him, with Daniels was I thought, okay, his floor is really, really high, probably the highest of the three. Yeah. I don't know if his ceiling is above Williams May, and what he has shown me in the NFL is his ceiling is higher than I ever thought. And it's been a joy. Drake, it kind of reminded me a little bit of like 2020 Josh Allen, maybe like, in terms of like, there's some misses where you're like, huh, how'd that happen? But then enough special plays and good decision-making overall, by the way, I thought, where you feel good about it. And there's definitely going to be enough there for them to, certainly the offense is going to be much more entertaining to watch this year. I loved, by the way, that first miss, he was trying to hit a crosser to DeMario Douglas and just sails it. And it's just a bad throw and it's picked off. And that's that. Then I think it was with about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, goes back to it. They get cover one. Teams play a ton of man coverage against New England. And he not only hits him perfectly, he sets him up to get huge yards after the catch. And Dominique, like, that's what I love to see. Like, oh, it's like watching a plant like grow, you know, like it's like, oh, you learned, you did the same thing and you did it well. And in the course of one game, that's really all you want to see from a young quarterback is does you feel like he's getting better? And I think we're going to see that with Drake May.
Yeah, in the course of one game, it's kind of unrealistic to even expect it. Like, that's promising. Normally, I'd be excited to see from month to month a rookie quarterback, like, address issues. But if he's doing it in one game, like, the Patriot fans should be really excited about what they saw from this young quarterback. So let's not get, like, over our skis here. But, like, this was for a first start. We saw a piece of everything that you would want to see if we can eliminate the issues and see the good stuff more consistently. And that'll come when he gets more help too. But yeah, this is a really promising start for him.
2025 New England Patriot T. Higgins.
That out there. It might be good. Yeah. I'll take
all right. Your winner is also a quarterback.
Baker Mayfield. I feel like this is a little bit overdue. Because he's been playing pretty well recently. And this game probably was
this game was wild.
Yeah. And he put up 50, or the team put up 51 points. So it makes you think that Baker was, like, perfect and amazing. And he wasn't. He was really good. He wasn't super, like, downfield attacky. Like, it was a lot of stuff picking the team apart, which – to still put up those numbers and have, what do you have, 300 something yards and a bunch of yards was still pretty impressive. He ended up with 3 interceptions. And I wanted to say that. You're right. A couple of them weren't his fault. And I wanted to use that as a defense of Baker. But there are a couple other times where he hit guys at the chest that they dropped him. So I think it averages out to probably a fair number. But for him to be able to do this in while what's happening in Cleveland is happening, it's nice to see that this team, and I proposed this a couple weeks ago at my show, that is this the year where a non-superstar quarterback wins Super Bowl? Because, like, every 10 years or so, we have one or two times where a non-superstar guy wins the quarterback or wins the Super Bowl, and this is shaping up to be
Goff.
A possibility for one of these years.
Baker. Yeah.
Wouldn't be where I would put my money, but if he can play like this, like he's for the last 3 weeks, I guess he's been playing well.
He can continue to play like this. He has been playing well, and it feels watching Tampa, it feels sustainable to me offensively because the infrastructure around him, I think, is so good and is going to continue to be good. I think their coordinator is good, M. Cohen. Right. Obviously, Godwin and Evans are both playing out of their minds. Yeah. And what really jumped out to me in this one, other than all of the 9,000 unhinged things that happened in this game, was the Bucs actually running the ball with success, because this has been a nightmare for them for years. And Bucky Irving and Sean Tucker, whose existence I learned of this week, climb up the depth chart with Rashad White out, and Tucker puts up 136 yards on 14 carries. Irving also ran the ball well. I think Tucker, to my eye, just looks like he's got juice that has been missing. But the other thing, Dominique, is that offensive line was just moving people for them. And this week, they ranked 3rd in run block win rate. They averaged 5 yards before contact per carry, which is always good. And I think they got Luke Gadecki back, so that was a big change. But to go back to sort of the Bucs over art, like, if they can run the ball, it doesn't have to be that great, but if they can run the ball, you got a run game, you got 2 elite receivers, you got a quarterback who's playing well, that's a real problem for most defenses.
Yeah, if that you had to pick, I mean, I guess it changes with the Lions injury, but I was going to say, if you have to pick one of the non-superstar quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl this year, I think you would have said Jared Goff, but I guess maybe you'll still say Jared Goff. And I mean, I guess I consider Purdy a superstar quarterback, but that team's not great. So is there one of those guys that you would pick? I mean, Geno's out of it, even though he's great. Baker.
I'm still on the Lions. We're going to talk about them in a second, actually. So that would probably be, and I think offensively, the Lions have the best offense of all the ones that we've been talking about. So I'm still on the Lions. But Bucks, I mean, the Falcons are, I feel like offense is starting to click too. But I think this, I mean, the Bucs certainly looked to me, obviously the Saints had a rookie quarterback playing Spencer Rattler, but you certainly saw the difference between these two teams. Oh my God, the Saints defense in this one, by the way.
I thought they were great.
That's a burn the tape game.
This holiday season, don't forget your number one fan, you. So what's a gift you could use? Maybe go to more home games or even travel to some away games while rocking a new away team jersey. Well, we've got something for you. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. With Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. That'll help with that swanky away jersey. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's already been an unforgettable football season, so don't miss the action and score the hottest deals on tickets with Vivid Seats. Slap on the face paint and hit the stadium. Enjoy unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and exclusive birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, we're excited to offer you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code MENA20. That's code MENA20. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right. Woofs. I mentioned them. Let's do the Lions. So it's a woof, of course, because they win the battle, but maybe lose the war this weekend because they lost their best pass rusher, Aiden Hutchinson, who it's fractured tibia, I think, something. And they said maybe he'll be back for the Super Bowl, but most people seem to think that's pretty unrealistic. This is brutal, not just because Aiden Hutchinson was having an unbelievable season, leading all pass rushers in a number of metrics, but also they have nothing else really at edge, or nothing that we've seen thus far. I mean, no other edge. So Aiden had 40 pressures. No one else on this team had more than 7 from the edge. The interior pass rush is quite good, Dominique. You saw that in this game by the Lynn McNeil, DJ Reader, Leben Onwuzurike. But it feels to me like they absolutely have to make a move at pass rusher.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've heard Max Crosby's name out there. It's going to be hard to, that's not a realistic thing. So don't get excited, Lions fans. There's nobody out there to replace the best player on your defense. So like that's the, when it happened in a game, it was like devastating because I think the Lions have become like all people's like second team, kind of like we all kind of like the Lions and root for them, and they're kind of fun to watch, and they were hilariously trying to force a touchdown to offensive lineman in the Cowboys game. Like this team and Dan Campbell is the like half brute, half nerd that gives everybody what they want, and it was like kind of heartbreaking because the one major criticism is their lack of edge pressure. And I guess you could criticize other parts of their team, but that one's always been kind of glaring. It's the major issue. And for them to get an injury in that spot that they're already weak, and a team that wants to play a lot of man coverage, aggressive coverage, it's going to be really hard. You're asking a lot of the DBs, a lot more than you've been asking of them before. So,
yeah,
they're still good enough to play well and make it to the Super Bowl, but it drastically impacts their chances, in my view.
I'll be interested in seeing, and obviously this will be affected by any trade. And Max Crosby seemed, I would be shocking to me if the Raiders parted ways with him, because obviously the Raiders aren't competitive, but he is the face of the franchise. That feels like an ownership saying no type situation. Just, I could be wrong. There's still good names out there. I mean, we alluded to Hassan Reddick. Obviously he hasn't played football in a while, but listen, that as far as like what's available, that's certainly probably the best option would be my guess. I mean, because after that, you're thinking about names like Za'Darius Smith, Jadeveon Clowney, you know, Arden Key. And I don't like this. You're going to like 2/3 tiers down. But regardless, do you think that Aaron Glenn is going to have to change the way they play? Because we have seen in the past, last year, when he realized his secondary could not cover the way they wanted, they stopped playing as much man. I mean, do you think he'll dial that down? Do you think he'll blitz more? Like, how do you think he adjusts to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think he tries all of the above and sees what sticks. He has to change the way that they play. the sad part about, I mean, this is the point I was trying to make, is like all those names that you mentioned would have been nice to add while Hutch was healthy. Like that, those would have been nice additions to go opposite or to help bolster him. Like none of these guys are him. You're not going to replace his impact on the team. You're not going to be able to replace that. Yeah, you're gonna have to change the way you play, but it's hard for me to imagine a combination of changes to the roster and to the scheme that will get them back to what they were defensively. And what they were defensively wasn't like dominant. So I don't know. That's the scary part. I don't know where it ends up, but the best they can do is like a little worse than what they were before, in my view. But I mean, I've been wrong before. Maybe there's some miraculous coaching breakthrough.
If you're a Lions fan right now, you're hoping for a couple things. One, that you do trade for one of the guys we mentioned, because it's not going to save the season. It's not Hutchinson, but it'll help, right? Mm-hmm. Two, that you get continued growth from players on the back end. Tarian Arnold, Brian Banch came back, immediately made plays, was awesome. He's amazing. Linebackers have been playing really well. So hopefully, even if the pass rush is not as good, your play on the back end improves as the year goes along. And like I said, they are getting really good rush from the interior. So you would see that continue. And then three, your offense just demolishes teams. And guess what? I've got great news for you guys. That's happening because your offense is awesome. And it's everything we hoped it would be in terms of adding an explosive passing element on top of the run game. You certainly saw that on display in Dallas. So I have not lost hope for this team. It is an absolutely brutal, devastating injury, the kind of injury that changes seasons. But I feel like the offense, Dominique, might be good enough to mitigate it to some degree.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially coming off of that game we just watched. That offense is going to be a problem for everybody coming forward. And Williams' stuff is like, I'm so happy to see that. I've been happy to see that all year long. That element was the thing they were missing, and they've seemed to be able to consistently get big plays out of him.
I am a little nervous, though, touting the offense right before they enter Brian Flores' house of horrors. We'll see. We'll talk about that game in great detail in the preview, because that's one of the best games of the weekend. All right, let's wrap with your woof.
Nick, who is Sirianni? It?
Okay, let me ask you this. Because I'm sure by now, if you've been listening, you're familiar with what happened at the end of the Eagles game, which is Nick Sirianni chirping at Eagles fans, then bringing his children to a press conference as human shields, and then sort of apologizing for it later. Clearly, he got a talking to and said he apologizes if his energy was directed in the wrong direction. So what do you think was the biggest sin here? The chirping, the children, or the non-apology apology?
I think it's the non-apology apology, honestly. Like
the children is brutal.
Yeah, the children's a bad move. That's a brutal move also. But like, I don't know. It didn't hurt the children. It hurt the media, I guess.
It was just funny.
I think the non-apology apology bothered me the most, because it felt like, or it was very clear that he was put up to it. And it felt like the chirping hurt him. And the apology didn't help. It hurt more. It feels like we're watching, in his perception, because it feels like we're watching him slowly bleed credibility week after week after week. And that was another example where it felt like his dad was like, go apologize. And he's a guy who he doesn't have play calling. He doesn't have like some long track record of being a great assistant coach. Like, he tends to have very little credibility, and he does like these kind of tough guy, goofball-y things all the way back to the Super Bowl when he's talking trash mid-game and Jalen Hurts has to tell him to calm down. Like, all of that stuff. You don't remember? It was like during the timeout.
No, I just anyway. That's why I was making that face.
Sorry. Oh, my bad. Yeah, and so it just feels like, and then they replace the coordinators, and he's not allowed to talk to the quarterback. It just feels like he doesn't have any, like, anything of substance to be, like, the foundation of why people should respect him. And then you push him out there and make him apologize, and it just looks bad.
You didn't watch The Office, right?
No. I've seen episodes, but I never really watched it.
He feels to me like when Ed Helms' character took over briefly as boss, Andy. You know, it does, if you never watched it, it doesn't really make sense.
No, I mean, I know who Ed Helms is, generally his character. I got it. I've imagined.
Yeah,
I
know. Just, have you ever had a boss like that who, like, nobody respects? Or, like, is kind of, like, pre-fired? Like, everybody knows the time is almost up?
Yeah. I think I feel like I had a DB coach like that before. Where it was like he got the job and no one really respected him and would go around him. It's a bad spot to be in.
I don't know if I've ever had a boss like that. I do remember very vividly when I was in like fourth grade, we had a bus driver who none of the children respected. Oh. And he was a jerk. He was a very, very unpleasant bus driver. But there's always, it's very like, as kids, you outnumber the bus driver significantly. So that line is so thin. Like, it's like once the kids all realize that they actually have the leverage and the power in the situation, it can turn very quickly. And anyways, that's what I feel like watching Nick Sirianni. He's like a bus driver on a bus where nobody respects him and people are throwing stuff at him and he's turning around and yelling at the kids. And
there were like... previous years on the bus, there were some seniors on that bus that like would corral these guys. It's a bus full of freshmen and sophomores and no one there to like support Nick while he's trying to drive this bus angrily. It's bad.
He's about to pull over. Everybody's going to go silent. What's going on? He's going to get off. Not going to say a word. Everyone's going to look. He's just going to be smoking a cigarette outside. That's what happened in my situation, by the way. Oh. Yeah, it's tough. I just also like, why is it so hard to just say, yeah, that was messed up. I lost my cool. If he had done that, everybody would have kept it moving. I don't understand. Like the lack of authenticity sometimes with apologies and accountability is shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't mean it. That's why. he didn't mean it.
Do you, let's wrap here, feel like, so the Eagles won. Uh-huh. I thought the defense played well, but it's Deshaun Watson, so you're not going to get much credit for that. But it was a good game plan. I mean, they were just pressing and playing me. They were like, all right, we know what time it is here. The offense, it was kind of just like, A.J. Brown's back, so we can beat cover one. That was pretty much the sum total of it.
Game plan.
Do you feel, because I know you picked the Eagles to win the division for the year, just check in. Have you lost total confidence in them?
I mean, this is another situation where there is nothing else in the division that's really great. Like Washington is exciting, but the Cowboys are worse than the Eagles. But and the Giants, they don't have nearly enough, I think, for me to trust them. So the Eagles might win it by default, but I think I've said this to you a couple times. The Eagles aren't good. They just haven't been good in a long time. And last year they were winning a lot more, so we thought they were good, but they weren't good then either. And it to me feels like, they could win this division, but I just don't think they're very good.
All right, that's it for this week. Winners and woofs. What is the craziest piece of Jets news that could drop next week to derail us? Aaron Rodgers endorsement? No.
Yes, I was definitely going Aaron Rodgers in politics in some frame or fashion. Maybe he announces that him and RFK are running again. I don't know.
Or that he's accepted a position in the future cabinet or something. Yeah. But next week we'll be back next week I am going to be here for half of the episode. And then the second half of the episode, Dominique will be recapping Monday Night Football with Ben Solak, which he is learning now as I tell him.
News to me. Thanks, Mina. Remember you asked me about a boss that I had that lacked credibility? Apparently it's you. Just telling me what to do the last second.
I'm going to bring Nino on as a human shield next time. Wow!